Hello and welcome back. It's been quite a week in AI, mostly because the biggest story had almost nothing to do with a model release. Let's start there. On the 27th of February, Anthropic faced a deadline from the US Department of Defense under Pete Hegseth. Either remove the safety constraints on Claude that prevent it from being used for autonomous weapons without human oversight, and for mass surveillance of American citizens, or be designated a supply chain risk. That designation is normally reserved for foreign adversaries, Huawei being the canonical example, and would effectively mean exclusion from the US market. Anthropic said no. Dario Amodei published an open letter defending two specific red lines. The first, no fully autonomous weapons systems. His argument was partly technical. Probabilistic language models are not reliable enough for life and death decisions. And partly legal, in that nobody has thought through who bears responsibility when an autonomous system kills the wrong person. The second, no mass surveillance of American citizens. His framing there was interesting. He didn't claim it was clearly illegal, but that existing law hasn't kept pace with what AI can now do, and that Anthropic didn't want to be the engine that closes that gap before anyone's had a chance to think about it. AI explained covered this closely, and the detail worth sitting with is the internal contradiction in the Pentagon's position. The Department of Defense has its own directive, 3000/09, that already prohibits autonomous lethal systems and domestic mass surveillance. And the same department had previously signed an agreement with Anthropic on responsible AI use. So the ultimatum was, in some sense, the Pentagon asking Anthropic to violate commitments the Pentagon itself had made. The two threats were also logically inconsistent. Designating Anthropic as a supply chain risk implies they're a danger, while invoking the Defense Production Act to compel them implies they're essential. You can't really have both. The market response was immediate. Claude jumped to number 2 on the iOS App Store charts. A petition signed by over 340 employees from OpenAI and Google called on their respective CEOs to stand in solidarity. Then Sam Altman signed a Pentagon deal, hours after the deadline passed. Kyle Balmer and the AI Grid both noticed the crucial difference in language. Anthropic had demanded human control before deployment. OpenAI's deal referred to human accountability for the use of force, which is a retrospective framing, not a prior constraint. You're responsible after the fact, not in control before. It's a meaningful distinction dressed up in similar sounding words, and OpenAI's own employees drew the comparison to Palantir staff, not a flattering one. A number of OpenAI subscriptions were cancelled. XAI, for what it's worth, had already signed a Grok deal with the Pentagon without any public resistance whatsoever. The timing of one other thing didn't go unnoticed. The day after the Pentagon threat, Anthropic published a new version of its responsible scaling policy that, for the first time, decoupled its own internal safety commitments from its industry-wide recommendations. Several channels read this as Anthropic quietly giving itself room to maneuver while publicly holding the line. Whether that's a principled adjustment or a quiet retreat dressed up as principle, David Shapiro thinks it's the latter, arguing that flexibility and utility have simply won, and Anthropic is effectively finished as a market force. Kyle Balmer and the IGRID read it more charitably. Theo takes a different angle entirely. He points out the irony that Anthropic, which trained Claude on scraped internet data without permission and has faced substantial copyright litigation, is now accusing others of misappropriation. Which brings us to the distillation story. Anthropic published a report claiming that three Chinese labs, DeepSeek, Moonshot, and Minimax, had conducted a coordinated campaign to extract Claude's capabilities through 16 million API interactions across 24,000 fraudulent accounts. The report framed this as a national security threat. Theo's read, "The numbers are trivial. DeepSeek's share of those interactions was 150,000, roughly what a moderately busy API user generates in a few weeks. Minimax had 13 million, but Minimax had an official Claude integration in its product, which could explain most of that." He called the report politically motivated, designed to push Washington toward export controls and chip embargoes. Nate B. Jones framed it more neutrally. "Distillation is a rational economic choice for any actor that isn't a hyperscaler, because the cost ratio between training a frontier model and extracting its capabilities via API is roughly 1,000 to 1. It's not specifically Chinese, it's just the math. Kyle Balmer offered a middle position. The behavior is real. The Cold War framing is overblown." Nate also made a point worth keeping. Distilled models have a fundamental ceiling. They're compressed, specialized systems that perform well on narrow tasks and pass benchmarks, because the benchmarks reflect exactly what they were trained on. But in agentic work, running autonomously for hours on open-ended problems, the gap between a distilled model and a frontier model becomes substantial. He called this the performance shadow, and noted that current benchmarks don't measure it. Moving from the political to the industrial. Nate B. Jones spent a long episode on Google's position, and it's worth understanding the actual argument. Gemini 3.1 Pro made the biggest single-generation jump on Arc AGI 2 of any model, from 31.1% to 77.1%, and leads on 13 of 16 standard benchmarks. It costs roughly 1/7 of Anthropic's Opus 4.6. But Jones's point is that Google doesn't particularly care about model market share. Google designs its own TPU chips, trains on them, deploys through Google Cloud, which 9 in 10 AI labs use, and distributes to 650 million users through Search, Android, YouTube, and Chrome. The revenue comes from those surfaces, not from who's paying for API tokens. So when Google releases a cheaper, stronger model, it's not a price war. It's a vertically integrated platform, signaling that intelligence is becoming infrastructure. Kyle Balmer, though, made a counterpoint that I think is right. Gemini 3.1 Pro, without a harness like Claude Code or Codex that actually does work in the world, remains a chatbot. Benchmark leadership doesn't translate to productivity if the tooling isn't there. A smarter engine in a car with no wheels. Speaking of Claude Code, Anthropic had a genuinely busy week on the product side, somewhat overshadowed by the political drama. The most interesting new feature is remote control. After running a slash command in the terminal, you get a secure link that lets you continue a local session from your phone without SSH, without a cloud instance. The code keeps running locally, the phone is just a window. Leon Van Zyl, Mel Vinks, Nate Herc, and Alex Finn all demonstrated this. Mel Vinks had a practical warning about work trees, the new feature for parallel branches, noting that Claude creates them inside the project folder by default, which causes Git conflicts, and recommending a tool called Conductor instead. Scheduled tasks arrived too, recurring background jobs, daily briefings, weekly reports, running directly in the paid tier, and the Claude Code desktop app, which Leon Van Zyl demonstrated at length, now pulls together editor, terminal app preview, parallel agent sessions, work trees, SSH connections, and a plugin marketplace into one application. It's starting to look less like a terminal tool and more like an IDE replacement. Matt Pocock had a characteristically pointed take on Claude.md files this week. A study showed that human-written context files improve agent performance by about 4% on average, while AI-generated ones reduce it by 3% at 20% higher cost. His conclusion: don't run the init command. Don't let the model generate its own instructions. Keep the file minimal and manually curated. His preferred alternative is Claude Code Hooks, deterministic code that runs at specific points in the execution cycle. His example was a bash script that intercepts NPM commands and silently redirects them to PNPM. Deterministic beats instructional when you need consistent behavior. Cole Medin showed a slash command called E2E test that runs a six-stage validation process. Three parallel subagents analyze the codebase structure, database schema, and perform a code review. Then the agent starts the dev server, generates user journeys, iterates through them with browser automation, takes screenshots, and queries the database directly. The output is a structured report with fixed issues, remaining issues, and screenshots. The token cost is high, but you get systematic coverage rather than hoping the agent caught everything. On the agent framework side, OpenClaw dominated the week. Alex Finn was running what he called an OpenClaw factory. Five autonomous agents across five machines: Henry as orchestrator on Claude Opus, Ralph as engineering manager on OpenAI's model, Charlie doing local coding on Qwen 3.5, Violet doing research on Minimax 2.5, plus specialist agents for other tasks. The system built a functional multiplayer third-person shooter with a leaderboard in 6 hours. Whether that's impressive or terrifying probably depends on where you sit. Bart Sladichka had the most practically useful OpenClaw content, a token optimization workflow that can reduce consumption by up to 97% through session management, compact commands, OpenRouter, as a central API hub across 630 models, and using N8N for simpler daily tasks instead of running everything through the full agent context. The point about heartbeats is worth noting. If you have a recurring check every 15 minutes, that's 96 executions a day, each loading the full session context. Turning that off unless you specifically need it makes a significant cost difference. Mark Kashef went a different direction and replaced OpenClaw entirely with a system built on Anthropic's own agent SDK, controlled via Telegram with a three-layer memory architecture. Session IDs for in-conversation context, a SQLite database with semantic storage for longer-term recall, and context injection before each message. Response time under 5 seconds. The principle, as he noted, is model agnostic. The same architecture works with any model that has a CLI. On the model side, Claude Sonnet 4.6 was discussed on the Data Pizza podcast, where it was preferred over Sonnet 4.5 in 70% of comparative tests and over Opus 4.5 in 59%, with prompt injection resistance at Opus 4.6 levels and a 1 million token context window, at the same price as the previous version. Mercury 2 from Inception Labs is doing something architecturally different. It generates tokens in parallel, using a diffusion approach rather than sequentially, hitting over 1,090 tokens per second. World of AI showed it building a Tetris clone in 18 seconds against Claude Haiku's 1 minute and 24 seconds. The trade-off is on complex reasoning tasks, where the parallel approach struggles, but for latency-sensitive applications, it's a genuinely different paradigm. Nate B. Jones and David Shapiro both spent time on the longer arc, where this is going over the next 36 months. Shapiro's framing centers on the METEOR evaluation, which measures how long an AI agent can work autonomously before needing human input. Claude Opus 3.5 was at 14.5 hours median autonomous success. The Data Pizza podcast confirmed a related data point from an Anthropic paper. The longest autonomous turns in Claude Code grew from 25 minutes in October 2025 to over 40 minutes by February 2026, while user interruptions per session dropped from 5.4 to 3.3. Shapiro's point is that if the doubling rate holds at roughly 90 days the trajectory toward full-day autonomous work is closer than most people have priced in. Nate's contribution was the concept of the capability dissipation gap, the distance between what AI can do and what organizations have actually integrated. He identified four friction forces: regulatory lag, organizational inertia, cultural resistance, and trust deficits. His argument is that this gap is where the asymmetric opportunity sits. Large firms have capital and data, but full organizational drag. Small teams can operate at the capability frontier, while their competitors are still in quarterly planning cycles. The education angle from Nate's other episode is worth a moment. The tension he's navigating with his own children. His daughter does maths by hand and also uses Claude Code, is the same tension Nate describes as the calculator debate of the 1970s, except faster and with higher stakes. His seven principles are sensible, but the one that matters most is the one he calls attempt before augmentation. Try it yourself first, then use AI to extend. The problem isn't that AI is too powerful, it's that it's frictionless enough that you can bypass the difficulty entirely. And difficulty is where learning actually happens. A few quick things before we close. Waymo rides in San Francisco cost $2 against an $18 Uber equivalent, which is either a preview of urban transport or an extremely expensive marketing exercise, depending on how you value LiDAR-based 360-degree sensor arrays. Anthropic quietly retired Opus 3, its oldest model, and is running a Substack account for its retirement thoughts, which is either charming or unsettling. Sam Altman's comparison of AI training costs to raising a human child generated roughly 20 million views, mostly negative. A useful reminder that the people building these systems are not always well calibrated about how they sound to everyone else. The thread running through all of it this week, really, is the question of who gets to set the terms. Anthropic drew lines and held them, at real cost. OpenAI drew similar sounding lines and found the language that made them softer. Google doesn't need to draw lines because it's playing a different game entirely. And the rest of us are trying to figure out what the lines even mean when the technology moves faster than the institutions designed to contain it. That's the question that will outlast this week's news cycle.